It's the Skinny Podcast, only on Local12.com. Now, here's Richard Skinner, joined by Chad Brendel of BearcatJournal.com and Rick Roaring from MusketeerReport.com.
Yeah, welcome into the podcast for this Friday. I am Richard Skinner, Local12.com digital sports columnist and editor. He is Rick Roaring here, and he is Chad Brendel there, and we're happy that you can be with us on this delightful Friday. Hang on, before we get started, I just want to let you know that Buffalo has fouled again, and Edmund Sumner has missed another free throw, in case you're wondering. kind of crazy. Chad, I'll get to you in a second, because you got a big weekend for the UC Bearcats, but I want to start with Xavier, which by the time many of you may be listening to this, will have either be playing another game on this Friday, or have already finished a game with Clemson on this Friday. So
pre-game or a post-game show.
Yeah, that's right. We can do a little bit of both for that. So let's touch, though, Rick, very quickly on the win yesterday against Missouri. I know a win that has probably fans going, what in the world is going on here? Bottom line is, it would have been a horrible loss. It's not a great win. It would have been a horrible loss.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wrote, Skinny, is that it's one of those things where it's certainly not something you're celebrating as a Xavier fan. It's not something you feel good about. But when you look at it, the alternative was a whole lot worse. So it's a game where you shot 2 for 22 from three. You're probably going to do that maybe one or two more times this entire season where you shoot that poorly.
Yeah, but I will say in two of the first three games, that's 6 of 39.
Yeah, I mean, they're off to a slow start shooting the basketball. But again, I mean, this team has shot the ball well the past 2 years with the same exact type of guys. So if that's your biggest concern about this team is that they don't shoot well enough, I think you're going to be in for a really great year as a Xavier fan. That being said, you know, had they lost with the big three playing really well, it'd be a whole lot worse.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if they shoot 60% from the field and shoot over 50% from three and combine for 75 points and you lose, then you go...
Or you have the same result where you go into overtime and you barely win.
Yeah,
it would have been a lot worse off if those guys played well.
No doubt. No doubt about it. Talk about a couple things from that game. Number one, some of the foul trouble that occurred for Xavier, and it does show without having Miles Davis, without having Kaiser Gates, you get a one or two key guy, one guy in foul trouble, you get two in foul trouble at different times, you really run into some troubles.
And with the way the game is being called right now by the officials, the way it starts out, seems to start out every year for the last 3 or 4 years, everyone's in foul trouble. So it's not ideal. We talked about it. I can't remember how I did about 700 podcasts last week and a couple TV shows. So can't remember.
It all runs together.
Yeah, where all we talked about this. But one of my things last week was my big takeaway is the fact that when Xavier has to get into their rotations and they get past kind of that starting five, that set five that they're comfortable with, they seem to get out of sorts. And we saw that again yesterday. It was the same thing. Once you get someone in foul trouble and they go to the bench, you start rotating, you start playing two bigs, whatever have you, those second, third rotations seem to throw them off track, and they just can't find their offense, their continuity. Their ball movement just hasn't been there. They've been a little rushed, taking some shots that they normally wouldn't take. So I think that's what you're looking for as a Xavier fan going forward the rest of the weekend is – can they get that offense going even when it's not the starting five playing for the first 4 minutes of the game? Once they get in that first substitution, can they keep it going?
Some good minutes from Rasheed Gaston, though, and some good offensive play, you know, late and into the overtime from Sean O'Mara when they needed somebody else to make some plays for him.
Absolutely. That was the huge bright spot from the game for Xavier fans was the play of the bigs. I mean, that was obviously the big weakness kind of coming into the year that everyone was concerned about. It didn't look too good through the first game or two. Rasheed Gaston got it going in the second half of that Buffalo game. He looked a lot better there. And then yesterday he looked exactly like the guy Chris Mack has been hyping up to be, which is solid. Not a go-to scorer, but a guy that can get you a bucket in the post. He finished with 12 points, had the double-double with 10 boards, which is really what you expect from him, is the rebounding and the defense to be there on a nightly basis. And he certainly showed that. And as you mentioned, Sean played pretty solid too. And then Tyreek Jones, everyone was real high on him after the Buffalo game. He did exactly what he does, which is 4 rebounds in 9 minutes.
He also fouled
5 times in 9 minutes, which is just incredible.
It really is. We're going to talk about some foul stuff here in just a moment. But, yeah, and he had 11 rebounds on Monday night against Buffalo, so giving him some at least minutes getting rebounds off the bench.
He's disruptive. I mean, that's the thing. He blocks shots on defense, and he goes up and boards on both ends.
All right, so Xavier gets the stop, forces the ball. They get the ball back. I don't know if Chris Mack or J.P. McCure would have been sick if that midcourt shot had somehow gone in after the timeout was taken. But the side out, everybody always talks about don't forget the inbounder, and it was a good read by the the defender. He just decided he was going to run through him like a free safety and knock him for a loop. But I like the play.
I'm telling you what, you hit the nail on the head. I think Kim Anderson's exact words to Terrence Phillips were, don't forget about the inbounder.
Right.
And he forgot about him for a split second.
That's all it takes.
Remembered, and then I thought he was playing free safety at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was doing on that.
I said, you know, if this had been football, he might have gotten a targeting penalty. It's possible.
I think you've got to disqualify
him. It was darn close.
You don't even need to make a play on the ball. Just get in the way. I don't know why he was diving through Sumner there for the ball. But that being said, Edmund Sumner had missed five free throws.
So missed the first of the two in that circumstance. Yeah. So that the second one, it danced all over the rim, went in. Chad, I'm sure you watched the end of the game too, but somebody please help me with what Missouri did there at the very, very, very end with point. Now, granted, point three, I got a play for you here I'm going to come up with in a second for the point three length of the floor play. But
wait till you hear that.
Can anyone tell me what in the world Missouri was doing? Anyone?
It was the time. They just took a knee and ran the clock out.
I think that's what it was.
The Marvin Lewis.
It was a Marvin Lewis clock, school of clock management right there. Obviously, they were trying to get the baseline charge where the guy comes over, sets a screen, the guy runs the baseline. You hope he runs him over. They never call that foul.
The end result of that play, Skinny, is not giving up and just taking a knee.
Yeah.
The end result is you still heave the ball the full court.
It was literally here. Oh, we're done. Okay, good. We covered. We're getting 14 and a half. We win. Have a good day. Now, I do have a play I'm going to run by you. You know me. I like plays. I have a side out-of-bounds play, though, that kind of like Xavier does, but we run a guy all the way almost to a corner. He comes sprinting back almost to the right of the key, throw it to him, and then he's got a choice to spin and go or flip to the guy going by. So you got a couple of variations. But all right, here we go. Point three to go. I'm in Missouri's huddle. I'm Kim Anderson.
Full court.
This is my play design.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to take my inbounder. He's going to throw it as high and as far as he can. Everybody else is going to try to box out, let it bounce, if you can possibly let it bounce off the floor, and then jump up and go for the tip. Because that's all you could do right there. You had no chance to catch and shoot. Obviously, no chance to dribble. It was just going to be a tip in. Your thoughts on that play call?
Skinny, I think you've been coaching middle school boys for too long. College guys can throw the ball the length of the court easier than you could.
They can throw it through the bucket. They can throw it through the rim. I've seen guys do that before.
So why wouldn't you just throw it as high and as far as you can and try to get a normal tip in?
Because I don't think you can get a controlled tip in that circumstance. You can get it when it comes off the floor, the velocity gets down a little bit, then you can control the tip. Now you got to box out. You got to box your ass off.
You're a big science guy.
I'm not going to lie. You got to box out hard and long and hold them off. But see, if you do that, then the other guys are trying to swim their way through you. Maybe they grab and pull and they get called for a foul.
I'm not even going to entertain this.
Thank you. This is what you leave the podcasting studio, our luxurious studios here.
It is luxurious. We even got sound thingamajiggers.
And this is what I deal with now. I've got Coach Skinny in here, Brendel. He's got his clipboard out. He's drawing up box out full court plays. It's brutal.
Point three. Let me just say.
Off the ground first, Rick. That bounce off the ground first.
Yeah, that's right. You bounce it. You throw it as high as you can. It bounces high. It goes towards the rim. Jump up and tip it.
You know how many people, if they're driving their cars while listening to this podcast, have just wrecked, just ran right off the road and ended it now, put themselves out of misery?
No. You've got to think out. Well, let me just tell you, was Missouri's play any better?
No.
Okay.
No.
That's all I'm going to say.
You're better than Kim Anderson.
Thank you.
Better than Kim Anderson.
Thank you. That's all I wanted to know.
You're the skinniest kid at Fat Camp. Congratulations.
Well, that's a good point too. That's very well said. Speaking of the end of that game and the foul situations, and then Monday with all the fouls, I think Buffalo fouled 22 times in the first half.
Yeah.
I know the conversation gets brought up again of should we go to six fouls in college basketball?
No.
Yeah. I was going to start with you. So there's your initial answer. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'll ask it again. Give me your reasons why no. And again, I'm not disagreeing with it, Chad.
Well, I mean, everybody says, well, the NBA has six fouls. Well, the NBA plays 48 minutes instead of 40.
8 minutes longer, correct, yes.
You can't – you're promoting more fouls if guys have six fouls. Here's a novel idea. Stop fouling.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that.
Okay, but here's the issue. We've got two different sports going on here, two different officiated events. You've got the non-conference schedule where they call
everything
an insane amount
everything.
Of fouls. And then we get into Big East play, and everyone's got to be tough because you've got to defend when you're allowed to foul and grab. And
so let me revisit this question then. In the non-conference portion, in December-ish, do you go to six fouls then and go back to normal in conference play?
No, here's what I think you do. And it doesn't solve the problem of a star player sitting on the bench with a couple fouls. That's just going to happen, and I kind of agree. Look, you don't play as long as the NBA. Going to six fouls would be too many. So what I think you need to do, though, to avoid shooting double bonus from the 12-minute mark on, is you get into quarters and you stop it, you know, after the third quarter, the bonus resets. So we're not shooting free throws for 20 minutes.
I think women's basketball now, they obviously are in the quarters system, and I think they're 5 fouls, and then they're double bonus after 5, I believe, and then it resets every
right,
quarter.
Right, and that's I think that's the better solution. It solves more. My bigger issue is the length and how many free throws you're shooting. It does suck to see star players sit on the bench.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, as a coach, you're going to coach your guys to defend the way you need to defend at the
end
of
conference
the year,
play. Absolutely.
In conference play.
Which normally is very physical.
Yeah, and so you cannot change it. You're not going to teach them differently for the beginning of the year. So the whole we'll stop fouling idea is nice, and I agree, except for the fact that in 2 months this won't be a foul anymore.
Right,
and
no, no.
So
right,
you
right.
have to teach them to play that way.
Well, and I was asking my buddy. He was at the game Monday. He texted me. I was obviously covering the Bengals game. He was at the Xavier game, and he texted me, and he said, "You're not going to believe how many fouls Buffalo has in
half."
Insane. And I said, "Are they still trying to guard man?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, then at what point, just because you can't guard people off the bounce, do you have to go to a zone because you can't guard without fouling?"
Skinny, not only were they still playing man, they were still like running out and attacking guys at midcourt trying to foul, essentially. Like, I'll say this, there were too many fouls called in that game, but Buffalo wasn't like shying away from them or doing what they could
right,
to prevent them.
Right.
A lot of them were fouls and legitimate fouls. So
let me ask you guys a question. Does Cincinnati play? Is Cincinnati one of the most physical defenses in the country
no
every
doubt.
Season?
Yes. Yeah.
Are they also one of the least penalized fouls called against teams in the country every season?
Yeah. No. I mean, there's a way to teach that, and there's a way to do that. No doubt.
So teach it. Do it. They're still physical. They're still one of the most aggressive, most efficient defenses in the country. You can play good defense without fouling, without, you know.
Unless you're Buffalo.
Well, I'm sure what Buffalo did was the Rick Pitino method of they call them all.
That's my method. I'm serious. That's my, you know what, they can't call all of them.
Yeah. And
I got 60. I got 12 kids. I got 60 fouls. Let's go foul 52 times.
Hey, the refs took that challenge to heart.
They did 38 fouls. 38 fouls on Buffalo.
Yeah.
That is absolutely crazy.
Yeah. It got to the point where the fans in Cintas Center were legitimately booing the refs for calling fouls on Buffalo. I'm not kidding. That's not even remotely a joke. That's
crazy.
Dead serious.
That is just absolutely crazy. All right, so I think we're all in agreement. No six fouls, though.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, on top of that, it would make the game even – I mean, you're trying to get games now back to that two-hour window. What was the game Monday? 2 hours and 20 probably?
It felt like four.
I know. I'm sure it did.
I was in a media room after that. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
Time just disappears.
No, I mean, you're trying to get those games in that two-hour window. Six fouls would get you in a – especially – can you imagine the last minute and a half of games when you got that many fouls to burn?
Oh, not good.
I know there's a couple people, UC fans, that live over by Xavier that have commented on Friday and Monday night. They left the UC game, got back to their house, and were in their house before the Xavier game ended.
I can believe it.
Yeah.
I can absolutely believe it. Speaking of UC, Chad, let's talk about the win over Albany. People are going to scoff and look and say, oh, it's just Albany. We talked before that's a good win, especially the margin of victory, and especially, again, the way UC played.
Yeah, I mean, they're at a point right now where offensively they're playing a lot better. They're still not hitting from three, but they're very efficient from two right now. I mean, it's early. It's obviously two games in, but their offensive efficiency is up in the 40s, which is a huge improvement from where they have been. And, you know, Jacob Evans didn't play well and still had 19 points. And, you know, offensively, Kyle Washington is still looking pretty good when he's around the rim and attacking. And he's the one that is, you know, the one you worry about foul trouble with Cincinnati, because he has a penchant for going over the back on offense and picking up really stupid cheap fouls. But when he's on the floor, they're a completely different looking team, and they really, you know, struggled with Albany and the physicality of Albany in the first half. But once they got rolling in the second half, they got on a nice little 21-4 run and put that thing away in pretty quick fashion.
And Jaron Cumberland off the bench, 11 points in 19 minutes, and I know that's what you got to hope, is he can provide that offensive lift in the 17-22 minute range, whatever he plays.
Yeah, and he's knocking down some, you know, starting to knock down some shots. He hit two threes. He's been, you know, a bit of a factor on the offensive glass from the wing, which for somebody his size, you want to see out of him. I think in terms of, you know, what you wanted to see from Jaron Cumberland to start the season, I think he's definitely given you that in the two games that he's played, and they're very much going to need him this weekend up in Uncasville, Connecticut.
Chad, one of the things you talked about last week in the opener against Brown about Jacob Evans was you made the comparison to, like, Sean Kilpatrick. When he played, it looked so tough, and he was max effort all the time, whereas Jacob Evans seems to be able to just do it. You know, it just comes easy to him at times. I think we really saw that in this game where he didn't play well at all, especially in the first half.
No.
And then you just saw it, all of a sudden he has 19 points. You know, I mean, on an off night, he gets UC 19.
Right.
That's just something they haven't even come close to having the last 3 years.
No, and he did it. He was the one that really sparked that 21-4 run. Justin Jennifer had a really nice baseline drive, hit him in the corner for an open three. Then he gets Troy Copain steal. Evans gets a layup. There's a block shot. Evans gets a dunk. And, you know, before you can blink, he's put up 10 points, and I think it was just under 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, that's the type of offensive player that he is. And, you know, if he's going to go through the season where his quiet nights are 15 to 17, 19 points, this is a completely different Cincinnati offense. And, you know, that's been the question on this team is, can they be a more efficient offense? And we found out on, you know, last Monday night that even when Jacob Evans not playing well, he's still such an important factor that he can give you that type of production, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, it's a blowout in a game that was, you know, nip and tuck for 20 minutes.
Troy Copain had a quiet night, 8 points, but the thing that impressed me, 5 assists and no turnovers in 32 minutes. Is he still adjusting to his role a little bit?
No, I think he's just – he's got this weird thing. That, it's not weird, I guess, but when they're playing the lower-level competition, and this has been his – situation for the 2 years that he's been a full-time starter, he kind of dials it back. Now, he did have a stretch in the first half when they were struggling where he had 8 points pretty much, you know, consecutively. He had 2 steals in a row. Troy Copain actually dunked 2 times in a row, which I don't think has ever happened in his career before on consecutive possessions. I don't know that he's ever dunked twice in the same game before. but he took over when the team was struggling in that first half. Got them where they needed to be at halftime. You know, a lot of guys, Knicks got that, the 2-foul policy. If you've got 2 fouls in the first half, you sit. They had 6 with 2. So, they were struggling a little bit. Troy got them through the first half. And then in the second half, he sat back and facilitated and got some assists. And, you know, the big thing for him is, you know, take care of the basketball, get some rebounds, get some assists, fill the stat sheet. But when the competition steps up, I think last year in the lower tier games, he averaged like 8.5, 9 points a game. In the big games and the games that mattered against top 100 opponents in the RPI, he was up over 15 points a game. So he's just a guy that when they need him, he rises to the occasion. And you know, they didn't really need him against Brown except for that stretch in the first half. When they did need him, he took over a little bit.
Is that a consistent motor thing? Is that a... is it one that I'm sure McCone would like to see be more consistent as far as performance level goes, or is that a good thing that when it does matter the most, he comes through the most?
I mean, it's a weird deal. I don't know that I've ever really seen anybody approach the game like that. I don't know if it's just the way that he sees the game.
What? Is he just a lot more comfortable as a role player? I mean, thinking back to how we kind of watched him, you know what I mean? Like, not that he doesn't have the toughness and the willingness to lead a team when he has to, as you've sort of laid out here, but is he just more comfortable in that role where he can not be the go-to scorer?
You know, that's a great question, Rick, and I don't know how to answer it 100% because you go back to Connecticut last year, you know, the AAC tournament game.
He's absurd.
He's
an absurd
dog. Yeah.
I mean, he's got that weird switch in him where he goes from being floor general to being alpha dog. And I don't know that I've seen many people have that switch. Either you're an alpha dog or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
When the bright lights go on, he flips the switch and he becomes an alpha dog. And when it's a game that he feels like, you know, he wants to get his teammates involved, he just kind of dials it back. It's a weird on-off switch with him that you've seen develop over the 4 years that I really don't know how to describe because I haven't seen it in, you know, that's not how guys typically are. Usually, you know, it's like when you recruit a kid and, the, you know, you're worried he's a low-motor kid. 99.9% of the time, that kid's a low-motor kid the rest of his career.
Right.
You know, Choice Mutar is great. He plays hard. He does everything the team. He's not as aggressive on offense when the bright lights aren't on. And when the big game comes, all of a sudden he's looking to take big shots and he's looking to drive to the rim. I've never really seen a kid be able to turn it on and off like he does. And it's perplexing. I think Rick's question is great because I don't necessarily know how to answer it because yes. But no, it's
not in a bad
50.
Way, right? Yeah.
No, I'm one of my AAU kids who I think will be either a low level Division I player or a high level Division II player. He's the same guy. In a game where you win by 30 points and everybody else is doing their thing, he's more than happy to get 4 points and 5 assists and walk to the bench and sit down. But in a game where you're playing some high level team that's got some Division I recruit on it, he's going for 26, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists. It wasn't a motor thing with this kid either. It wasn't me having to tell him, man, you're not playing hard. He was playing hard. He just when he needed to flip that extra ignition switch, he did it, and that's a good thing to have. You're right. If it's a motor issue, it's usually a motor issue across the board. It doesn't seem to be that way, but you're right. When you just look at the raw numbers with him, it is a weird circumstance.
It's a really interesting career arc. I can't think of too many guys that, like you said, Chad, have had that switch where it's clearly they can consistently do it when they need to, but at the same time, they'll also consistently pull it back a little bit and turn it down and look comfortable as that role guy. You mentioned when you were talking about Evans, you mentioned that assist Justin Jennifer had where he penetrated all the way down the lane, kind of looped back around and hit him in the corner, which is kind of, if you're Mick Cronin, that's exactly what you're looking for Justin Jennifer is. Just be disruptive, get into the lane, and then understand our offense and where your outlets and your shooters are going to be. That's exactly what he did in that play, but not just that play. He had 6 points, 5 assists, 3 steals, only 1 turnover in 19 minutes. To me, that's exactly the guy that I never thought Justin Jennifer would turn into when we were watching him AAU. And it's too early to make any type of like definitive statements, obviously.
Because of level. But it's a good start.
Playing. But if this is the real Justin Jennifer, it's a guy I never thought he'd turn into, to be quite honest.
Hey, we're in the same boat, man. We had that evaluation pretty much the same between the two of us. We thought that he was going to always struggle being too flashy, settling down and buying into an offensive system that really, needed him to be a facilitator because he's never going to be, I don't think he's ever going to be a 12-point-a-game scorer. But he can be a 6-assist-a-game guy if he buys into it, and it looks like he's starting to buy into it. You know what, Rick? I don't know how much you got to go back and watch on the tape. The shocking thing for me was how disruptive he was defensively.
That's what I was just going to say. He's not a liability whatsoever. In fact, he's a pest at this point defensively.
Yeah, Mick was talking about it on his show last night, and he was exactly right. There was a point in the second half where whoever had the ball from Brown didn't even want to dribble because he had become such a pest playing. I liken it to, and I've got a great rant coming on this later in the show. Not this specifically, but you know where I'm going when I talk about it. I liken it to the year Connecticut won the national championship when Ryan Boatwright would play up on top of that defense and just play completely underneath your skin. And you didn't feel comfortable even taking one dribble.
Well, and then you have a hard time and not want to get into your offense either.
Right, that's exactly what he did. I mean, they just looked completely uncomfortable even putting the ball on the floor once because he was going to play up underneath, take it away, and go down the other way for a score. So him buying in on the offensive end is a bit of a surprise. Him becoming a really good defender, I didn't see that coming at all.
Yeah, I'm still a few more performances away from calling him the next Ryan Boatwright, but it was a nice performance.
He's trying to make an analogy.
I know, I get what he's saying.
I'm not saying he's the next Ryan Boatwright. I'm saying that's how he has been playing defense so far.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, it was good. It was good. He's played much better than I ever
expected. It's a reach 2 games in, but the analogy's a good one. I liked it, Chad.
Yeah.
He was shaking his head the whole time, in case you're wondering.
I'm sure it was. And
when we got to Ryan Boatwright, it became, it got a little carried away, but it was good.
Trying to give a visual example for people that can maybe remember that, okay? That's all he was trying to do.
He's one of 6 people listening, you remember.
But there's also not a lot of Joe Cremos or Cremos or whatever his name is in the world that they're going to play either.
That's a great point.
Mr. 8 turnover, that's a nice night.
Exactly.
That's a really nice night. All right, let's look ahead to UC this weekend because it is a big weekend. Rhode Island first, and then, well, it won't be as big a weekend if it's Penn State in the end, but Rhode Island first, and then possibly Duke. And yeah, it's a Duke team that's missing a few parts right now, but still, obviously went toe to toe with Kansas the other night. And certainly, when they get healthy, they're going to be absurdly good. But this is a good, after a couple of games to get through that you should have won and should have won handily, and UC did. You step it up quite a bit this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, Rhode Island is in a lot of ways a mirror image of Cincinnati. It's toughness, it's physicality, it's, you know, playing hard nonstop from tip to whistle. The two teams mirror each other in a lot of ways. They have similar makeups of their roster, and that they both have a really strong starting five. The bench is quite a bit questionable on both ends, especially, you know, on the interior. There's a lot of unknowns. So it's going to be, I really think the more I look at this game, it's going to come down to the whistle. Rhode Island got themselves in a foul trouble against Brown. Brown hung right with Rhode Island. It was a 3-point game with about 2.5 minutes left. Now, granted, those are both teams from Rhode Island, it's a rivalry game, but, Cincinnati outclassed Brown, you know, start to finish, and Rhode Island really struggled with them because, Hassan Martin and Karan Iverson got themselves in foul trouble, and the guys on the bench simply aren't anywhere near as good. I think a big key for Cincinnati is going to be a Bobby Knight staple, the shot fake. I think Hassan Martin is very much one of those guys, kind of like Justin Jackson was for Cincinnati, where he just kind of tracks you down the lane and waits for you to go up so he can attack. If you can get him up in the air and get into his body and pick up a foul on him, get a couple early, you know, it becomes a completely different game because their defense is predicated so much on him being back there protecting the rim. They've got two incredible wing scorers, Jared Terrell and EC Matthews, and a solid point guard in Jarvis Garrett. Just a quality team. I was interested that they struggled with Brown because it seemed like a team that they really handle pretty easily. You wonder how much pressure Rhode Island is putting on themselves in this tournament, because this has been a 4-year build for Danny Hurley. And last year it kind of fell apart 10 minutes into the season when EC Matthews goes down with an injury. And now they're looking at it as, this is our year. They know this tournament is a big deal for them. They know they need to beat Cincinnati to get to play Duke for that boost on the resume. The same as Cincinnati knows they need to beat Rhode Island to get to play Duke for the boost on that resume. How about if everything just got turned upside down? Penn State gets the upset on Saturday, and now you're planning to lose that second game so you get to play Duke. But it's a huge game. Both teams have it circled. Both teams, I think it's going to be one of those, you know, strap in, it's going to be tight in the final 5 minutes, and just see who makes the least amount of mistakes coming down the stretch.
Are you wondering a little bit or interested to see if Rhode Island is going to have some type of hangover after that big rivalry game with Brown? I mean, if you can't get up for the Rhode Island-Brown rivalry, you just don't have a pulse.
I mean, they could. It could be a rivalry, you know, a rivalry game effect where they just lost their legs against Brown. And
Did you seriously call that game a rivalry?
Well, they're right next to each other, basically.
Cove Latin is very close to Covenant Catholic. I don't think they call each other rivals.
That's legit.
I would say it's one of those where it's much more of a rivalry for Brown than it is for Rhode Island.
I'm looking at a headline right now on CBS Sports previewing that game. Number 21, URI renews intrastate rivalry versus Brown.
It's like the crosstown shootout. It means a lot more to UC.
It's a Dunkin' Donut shootout.
I get it. That makes sense.
There you go.
Chad, we've said a lot of. It's a big game now for UC being in the AAC. You know, they need that big non-conference win now. But we've talked a lot of good things about UC and the way they've looked through the first two games. I think if you're a fan, you've seen a lot of things you wanted to see from this team. What's the one thing you haven't seen, or the one thing you would like to see going into this weekend from them?
Their perimeter defense is going to have to be better. You're dealing with, like we talked about, the three perimeter guys for Rhode Island. They're been very good. And then, you know, if you get to Duke, you're Grayson Allen and Luke Kennard. And, you know, the perimeter defense has been okay. But it's had some breakdowns, and it's had some moments of giving up open three-pointers and allowing some dribble penetration that, has kind of been an issue for them over the past couple seasons since they have they've gone to the matchup zone. So you want to see them be a little bit more sound on the perimeter, because once, the level of competition ramps up, guys' ability to make shots ramps up, and there were some shots in that Albany game that I thought, if you're playing either of the two teams that they have to see this weekend, there's a lot of shots that went in that didn't go in that game. So I think that would be the main concern. I think you definitely want to see Troy Copain kick that motor back into high gear and be the, conference player of the year candidate that the AAC coaches voted him as. And you want to see Kevin Johnson. Hopefully he's completely done with his respiratory illness that he had.
Did you give him
back in there? Huh?
Did you give him that?
No, I did not give him that. Actually, he had it first, so he might have gave it to me.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, spin zone. Well played on your part.
But to get him back out there, and he hasn't, he's a 6-7 point a game type guy. But through the years, he's made some big shots in his UC career, late in games against tough opponents. They need his presence on the floor that 20, 25 minutes a game. So, get him back to 100% and get him, being an impact guy again a little bit. Mainly for Kyle to stop fouling twice early in the game on stuff that doesn't matter.
By the way, you make fun of Brown. Going into yesterday's games, UC was number one in the country in RPI. They're not as of today. They're 11th today.
That Albany game, actually, and I forgot to get this in on Monday, that Albany game at the time was number one versus number two in the RPI.
How about that?
Yeah, RPI is a very relevant metric at this point in the
unless
year.
Unless I tell you that Xavier right now is tied for fourth.
Incredibly relevant all year, Rick, especially around tournament time.
Then it would really make a lot of difference about how I feel about the RPI. Trust me. It gets quite on my message board constantly.
New Hampshire, by the way, is tied for fourth right now in RPI, in case anybody's wondering. There'll be a two-seed or three, you think.
Skinny, I get mad when RPI is being thrown around on my site in March. Like, I don't like RPI, period, much less a month into the season. When
good.
It's
not now I got something else I get under your skin about.
Oh, I cannot wait till we get to tournament time.
Yes.
Your metrics and my metrics will be two different. Yours will be coming out of the print newspaper still, I would imagine.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or KenPom.
I'll be on my iPad.
Okay, good luck with that.
That being said, I'm the only one here who still works for a newspaper.
Exactly. See? Exactly. See, that's impressive how that works.
If there's one thing I've never wanted to do, it's work for a newspaper. So good on you on that one, Rick.
Yeah.
You're the big winner. Let's touch on Xavier a little bit, because it's weird to talk about today because it's such a fluid circumstance, because they are playing this afternoon. We're doing this on Friday morning. They are playing against Clemson. Is there enough in the tank for 3 days of this?
Yeah, I think so. Especially, you're going against Clemson, who really only has six guys anyway. Brad Brunell doesn't have any confidence.
Put up 93 on Davidson, holy cow, or 95.
Yeah, they're good, but he doesn't trust his seventh or eighth guy either on his bench. So they're kind of in that same boat. I mean, it's early in the year, and again, the bigger thing isn't so much, is Xavier too exhausted to get through it, or are they going to play, is Clemson too good or anything like that? It's so much more about is Xavier going to find the rhythm at some point? Are they going to kick the offense into gear? Are they going to be able to survive someone getting into foul trouble in the first half?
I guess here's the other part to that, too, and this is so early in the year to ask this, because you haven't had a lot of minutes build up on legs and bodies and all of that stuff. Is the jump shooting issues at all tied to the fact that they don't go as deep as they'd like to go?
I don't think it has anything to do
with it. Too early for that?
Yeah. I just, for whatever reason, your best two or three guys
just aren't shooting
it, and those are your shooters on this team. I mean, Miles Davis isn't here right now. Kaiser Gates isn't here right now. But Malcolm Bernard has been taking great shots. I like all the threes that he's taken, and he's actually made a few already.
He made one of their big two yesterday.
Yeah. So, to me, it's just the J.P. McCura, Trayvon Blewett have to make shots. And then Edmund Sumner is a guy you hope improved from last year, but he wasn't even really a good three-point shooter last year. So I don't think it has anything to do with them being tired or their legs being shot.
Yeah. It could be a weird circumstance, no matter how it works. They could play Northern Iowa, win or lose, which would be odd, because then they're turning around and playing Northern Iowa in a short period of time. No matter how this shakes down, the one thing you probably don't want to do is play Northern Iowa twice in this tournament somehow, someway.
Yeah, you do not.
Whatever it means. Northern Maybe it means Iowa. Losing today and facing Oklahoma, whatever. However it shakes down, you just don't want to. It just is a weird way this whole schedule thing worked out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's exactly right. You just just don't want to play Northern Iowa twice at this point. And they're a tough team, too. I mean, especially for Xavier, they shoot the ball really well. They moved it well. They played pretty good defense yesterday from what I saw. So, yeah, I think that Northern Iowa game is already going to be tough coming to the Centel
right.
Center. But you don't want to play them on a neutral and then at
right.
your
and vice versa for them as well.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
you know, the chance to get two losses hung on you on a neutral and on a road game. Or chance to actually pad the resume with a neutral win and a road win for
I think
you.
That's the scarier thing for Xavier,
right.
is you go show them what you've got in a neutral
Correct.
Game, and then they're coming to your place.
Right.
You don't want to lose a game at home
no.
to Northern Iowa, even though they're really
No, they
nice
are. No, no, they are. It's just
You should get a lot more respect nationally than they do. And
the schedule was very weird. Fellas, I do want to touch on Kentucky from the other night for just a minute, because they did play Michigan State. This is obviously not a Michigan State team that's ready for this quite yet, and I think they showed that they actually get a chance to – I mean, that's a tough way for a young team
I mean,
to start
but,
the
but,
year.
Okay, but,
but
I
Kentucky
mean, how can
was
Kentucky
very impressive.
Be ready
right,
for it?
No,
they're
they
nothing but
very, very impressive, no question about it, especially defensively. I thought this was going to be a team that was going to play a lot more 82 to 68 games as opposed to what was the other night holding Michigan State under 50 points.
Well, the defensive effort was really impressive, and it doesn't – this UK team doesn't have an Anthony Davis and a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist where, I mean, you're talking about two of the most elite college defenders, I mean,
right.
NBA defenders that
right.
I've ever watched, ever. I don't think they quite have that, but they have, almost regardless of who they're playing, five guys who can defend, who are long, who are athletic, that play really well together. And it seems like this team is already really bought into how hard they have to play. Like, Calipari does a good job with that always, but certain teams you see, like, get it, and other
right.
teams are like, he's forcing it. This team seems to get it. I don't know, like, do you guys, from your perspective, could this team be as good as the 2012 team was defensively?
They're long enough to keep you from getting to the rim very often.
Because if they're close to that, I mean, they're
right.
They're right there. I mean, they're a legit national title team. I mean, everyone knows that. But
yeah,
like,
right. But you still have to find a way to finish the deal and have reasons to say, here's why they can finish the deal.
Right. Like, if they're as good defensively as 2012 or even close,
right.
they're as good of a team as John Calipari's coached.
Yeah.
I don't think Cal gets enough credit for this, and I might be going out on a limb here, but I think he's a top five defensive coach in the country.
Oh, no question. The way he gets young kids to buy in every year
is outstanding. The one thing I do think he's really good at holding them accountable, and he says it publicly. It's not like he's selling you one thing publicly, doing something else. Probably. He is not afraid to tell you that this guy isn't playing as hard as he needs to, and it's an automatic why he's coming out of the game. It's an automatic why he's not playing as many minutes as he's like, and if he wants to change his ways, we'll give him minutes, and if he doesn't, he's not getting minutes, and it'll show up because he won't give them minutes.
Oh, I love that. Like, you see a guy not sprinting back on defense, they give up a transition foul or something, and it's immediate.
Absolutely.
And he'll say the same thing in his post game that he does to everyone on the court. Everyone can see what he's yelling at the kid. You didn't run. You're out.
Yeah, and he's talked about, I'm sure you guys, he's talked about his automatics, and I think his automatics are great. I think,
yeah.
you know, those hold young guys who, let's face it, with an ego perspective of what he's recruiting, if you don't hold them accountable, you literally let them run amok. And so he's done a good job of that. I'll give him a lot of credit for that. You know, I'm not a huge fan of his in any way, shape, or form, but he deserves a lot of credit for holding these guys who have nothing but NBA in their eyes and NBA in their minds and NBA in their hearts and NBA in their beliefs. He holds them to an accountability level.
More importantly, NBA in their pockets.
In their pockets, exactly right.
He came up with a great game plan on Miles Bridges. He executed it to perfection. That kid is really good,
yep.
and he was as frustrated as you could possibly get through the entirety of that game.
I have to say, Chad, I'm sure this came as no surprise to you. On a huge night for freshmen when, you know, you've got several of the game's top freshmen and the spotlights on Madison Square Garden are the biggest arena in our country for basketball, Malik Monk shows up and outshines everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just – when he hit his first three threes like that, it was already a must-watch game. It became blink because you're going to miss something special because we've seen that kid put up some huge nights when he's had the spotlight on him.
Yeah, when the bright lights turn on and Malik Monk, it's almost like with him, if that first one goes down, I mean, he had one of the bigger – buzzes around the Peach Jam I've ever seen a couple years ago. I think he was a sophomore going into his junior year, and he had one of those games where he put up like 54 points or something. And by halftime, everybody in all four gyms was like, "Man, you go over and see Malik yet?"
Yeah,
I mean, that kid, once he gets cooking, forget about it.
you couldn't get into the gyms that he was playing in the rest of the weekend.
That's crazy.
Because it was just packed. I mean, four people to the wall.
Everybody wanted to see it. The other one, though, is Isaiah Briscoe. When we had Jeff Drummond on last Friday, and he talked about how he thought he could be a difference maker and that the switch has kind of got off. The whole free throw shooting last year was such almost a distraction because that's all it got talked about is why can a guy who was a good free throw shooter and is a good free throw shooter, even in practice settings, not make them in games. But for him to put up 21 on a night when Monk goes for 23, that is just a great secondary offensive option on that night.
Yeah, I mean, it's really not a surprise to me or I think anyone who watched Isaiah Briscoe. It's so funny with the UK stuff how we talk about those kids. You know, it's he's the one who's not going to the NBA last year. So
he sucks.
He's forgotten He's not quite good enough. And now he's the wily old veteran of their team that can maybe chip in. It's like, no, Isaiah Briscoe's always been really, really, really good.
Right.
And it's no shock to me if he's one of their top scorers this year. I mean, he's a very talented player.
If they're going to win a championship, he's the most important piece.
Yeah.
I will say, I think this UK team, when you look at them offensively, they're going to go through lulls. And we kind of saw that in the first half. They ran out and then slowed back down, and then they run out again. They can't shoot, and they don't have enough ball movement and chemistry yet on the offensive end to kind of overcome that at times.
Well, they got a schedule coming up that's going to allow them to get that.
True. But they're so explosive when they run. And individually, they're almost always superior at four of the five, if not all five positions, to where they're just going to be really tough to beat, I think.
Yep. All right, fellas, a couple final thoughts. Anything from you, Chad Brendel, thought-wise? I know you don't have them often.
Yes. I've got a mini rant I want to go on.
I love it. Go for it.
I want the national media to stop protecting UConn and call out the fact that Kevin Ollie is a bad basketball coach. They go last night. They go out to Loyola Marymount.
Hashtag national title.
They barely escape Loyola Marymount. And everybody's, well, that's a huge win for UConn. No, they lost to Wagner and Northeastern before needing every second of 40 minutes to beat Loyola Marymount. That's an embarrassment.
Some might call it a
must-win. He doesn't know how to coach.
That's that national title.
He doesn't know how to get these guys into the right spots. And Shabazz Napier carried him to a national title in a year they finished sixth in the AAC.
What's it say about the five teams above them then? What's it say about the five teams above them then in the tournament?
It says that they got a favorable draw. They played the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight in Madison Square Garden. Congratulations. You took what Jim Calhoun built and you parlayed it into a national championship. Now you've collected a bunch of four- and five-star players. None of them fit together. They can't score. They're terrible on offense. And you've completely run that program into the ground.
How come everyone except for UC always gets the good draws?
I don't know. That's a good question.
That is
a
good question.
It would be nice if UC got a good draw every once in a while. But go back to that year.
How big of a concern is this for
the AAC? They got a really favorable draw to get to where they got. That was not – if you look at that team in the regular season, that was not a great UConn team.
No, it was not. Absolutely. There's no doubt about that.
Yes, Shabazz and Ryan Boatwright got hot and carried them to a national championship. Congratulations to Shabazz and Ryan Boatwright. Do you really think that was Kevin Ollie? Because I've been told from people around that program that they shut him out 6 weeks before the end of that season, said, we got it, we'll take care of
it. Smart coach, let him go.
Yeah.
Denny Crum method. Roll the ball out there, let him go.
That's right. How big of a concern is this, Chad, for the AAC then? If everyone was talking UC and UConn number one and two in the conference, and UConn, are they bad or are they just lose a couple early games and they'll be fine?
They are brutally bad on offense. And Al-Tariq Gilbert dislocated his shoulder last night. So that's their number one freshman and a guy that was supposed to help them on offense. I mean, Jalen Adams is not a great, you know, everybody wants to go back to him hitting the three-quarter court shot against UC. He had a bad year last year as a freshman. He wasn't productive offensively. They lost Daniel Hamilton. They're replacing him with Terry Larrier, the kid that transferred from VCU. That's a huge downgrade. Rodney Purvis is their star on offense, Rick.
You know what's going to save the AAC? UCF is number four in the RPI, Rick, in case you're wondering. They're tied with Xavier.
I will say,
they're playing a
I watched
fun
SMU last night, and they're a little bit better than I thought.
Who's
so
that? I'm sorry, who,
maybe
SMU?
UC-SMU battle.
There you go.
Well, that'll hurt that UC-UConn rivalry.
And Tubby will come to Memphis and save the day for the league. Hashtag
I think they're going to be better than people think, too.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, I
how about you, Rick?
I have since he hit on an AAC issue. I have. What the hell do you do if you're Georgetown? What, like, because you can't just pull you can't that let guy this, in and fire yeah, him yeah, in the 49
and for those that don't know, I mean, speaking
center,
of bad,
you know?
Speaking of bad losses, holy cow. I mean, you know, if this was a one-game circumstance where you just go, hey, chalk it up, they lost, it's
but
a bad
but it's not even close to it.
No, it's not. There's, this is a trend that just keeps going downward. At some stage, the old man almost has to step in and say, listen, you guys got to do what you got to do.
But I mean, they just opened up, I think it's like $49 million Thompson Family Basketball Center or whatever
right. let,
it is.
Let John III run it. Let him be the curator. Let him be the executive director of it. Honestly.
I've been told by people that legitimately they can't get rid of him until the old man's gone. So honest to God, what do you do if you're Georgetown right now? Because you're alienating your entire fan base.
No question.
There's not anyone who thinks – they were openly chanting fire JT3 at the game the other night. I don't know – that's an impossible situation for the administration.
Yeah, because, Kenny, I know, you know, you go back to the old Big East days. John Thompson II is a very reasonable man.
Oh, very much.
Yeah. Very, very, very kind and warm-hearted.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure all they would have to do is go to him and just say, hey, you know, we appreciate that you hit up all your former NBA guys and they donated all this money and we've got the Thompson Family Athletic Center and – you know, but you're going to have to tell your son he's got to kick rocks. I mean, I'm sure from knowing JT3 in the past, or JT2 in the past, and the way that he handled business, I can see where he would just be like, you know what, you guys are right. My son's got to go. I'm sure he would be warm and open-hearted and very kind to the needs of the administration in that situation. It just makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. But if you're the old man. Do you want your name dragged down with this too?
I don't think he's that self-aware to like think that's a possibility.
Oh, I think he's a smart guy.
He cares.
Yeah, I think that's a better point, Chad. I don't think he cares. You're right.
Well, right, but I mean that would be part of being self-aware to actually know like that hey, I'm getting dragged down into this because I don't think he would look at it that way. I think he looks as I am a god here. There's nothing that could tear my name down.
He is.
Exactly.
He's the one that built that program into what it is, and then what's his face? Who's the in-between coach? Craig Eschrick, he almost pissed it away too until they brought the Sun in.
Yeah.
The Sun did some good things, obviously, for a chunk of time, but last 3 years, I just looked at 18-15 in the NIT, 22-11, did get to the Sweet 16 that year, 15-18 last year, off to an 0-2 start with a loss to Arkansas State this year. Ooh.
That's just – but here's the bigger issue. It's one thing. Usually when you see these downward trends where you see a program fall off, you see a coach just really start struggling, they can't recruit.
Right.
They can't get the talent. He's got great talent. He's basically got a bunch of guys that Xavier couldn't land is what he's had the last two years.
Isaac Copeland.
I mean, it was a bunch of guys. Jagan Mosley. Xavier was recruiting a bunch of those guys and missed out on them to Georgetown. And – Georgetown can't do anything in the Big East.
They can't do anything in the Big East. They can't do anything against Arkansas State.
I mean, could you imagine the Big East right now if Marquette and Georgetown were what everyone expected them to be, which were the flagships of the new Big East?
Yeah, it was a nice performance last night, too, by the way.
Not good.
No.
But that's another team with a bad coach. That's another team with a bad coach.
They're slapping the floor, though.
Hey, he's over there working his ass off on the sidelines. I tell you what, he's shaking his little fists and stomping the floor really hard.
For those
who
don't know what we're talking about Wojo and Marquette's just horrible L. I mean, it wasn't a horrible L, but they just played horribly in losing to Michigan last night. So, all right.
Is that a fighting rivalry in the Big East, Rick Brewering versus Wojo?
Only at the last year's Big East tournament. One more quick thing here while we're on goofy topic. Xavier's playing Clemson today. I noticed Clemson, you brought up NIT there before for Georgetown. Mm-hmm. Clemson, when I was doing a little research last night, I noticed on their official athletics page, their basketball homepage, they have a giant banner picture with 2004 NIT semifinalists.
That's huge.
Advertised across the...
That's huge.
Do we...
For a football school?
No, do we need to expect better out of Clemson?
No, if that's where the bar's set, you ever make an NCAA tournament again, you're gold. You're gold.
That is exactly what we expect out of Clemson. Exactly.
That's wild to me. I just can't imagine putting not the fact that it's an NIT semifinalist performance, because that's embarrassing enough in itself that you're celebrating like a Final Four of the NIT, but it's from 2014. It wasn't last year. You're not celebrating. Hey, last year's team did this. Hey, thanks to our seniors. This is. A couple years ago, we made the Final Four of the NIT.
Why you go? You're going to make me look this up now. I got to see this for myself. Go ahead.
Hey, Skinny.
Yes.
I haven't got one in today.
Yes.
So I'm just going to say they can hang a Final Four banner and something.
I didn't hear. You broke up real quick. Say it again.
A at least they can hang a Final Four banner.
Chopper Five, come back in, Chopper Five. We can't hear you, Chopper Five.
Come back in, Chopper Five.
I think we've lost you, Chopper Five.
Go ahead.
Going once, going twice.
Let's go up to Chad.
Sorry, I think we lost him.
Chad?
All right, let's end the podcast.
No, go ahead, Chad. What do you got?
At least they can hang a Final Four banner in something.
That is true. That is true.
Didn't.
And I'm really upset that got out in Chopper Five mess because the comedic timing of the delivery.
It's gone now. Yeah, it's gone now. It's gone. We're sorry for that.
I can't imagine anyone would try to screw you up on that.
We're sorry that you broke up on that. All right, fellas, appreciate the time. As always, we will be back on Monday to recap a big weekend because a couple of games for both teams. We'll look ahead to next week, and we'll be back each and every Monday and Friday right here on the podcast, the College Basketball Podcast at Local12.com. Have a great weekend. You too, Chad.